Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls and continue our chat with Dr. Ian Rubenstein, who is, of course, a medium, his book, Consulting Spirit, and we'll be back with him and you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Ian. Doctor, what has this done to your medical practice? Has it scared off patients or has it increased?
Well, quite the reverse. I mean, it hasn't scared people off. People seem to like it, to my great surprise. So far I haven't had anyone come specifically to have a reading, but when it first started, of course, I didn't have much control over it. Can I tell you about one of the very first messages I gave someone?
Yeah, absolutely. That you gave someone, okay.
Yeah, so this was actually the 6th of December 2004, and the date's quite important. So this woman called Lucy comes into my office. She's 66. She's normally bright and bubbly, and she just bursts into tears. She's actually inconsolable. She didn't know why she was depressed. I didn't know why she was depressed. After 15 minutes of trying to find out what the hell was going on, couldn't work it out. And she said, "Look, Doc, you've got to give me something. You know, I feel terrible." And with nothing else to offer her, I sort of printed out a prescription for an antidepressant, a mild antidepressant. And as I gave it to her, I felt a blow to the back of my neck. I've had this about 3 times. Mm-hmm. And I heard a voice behind me saying, "Ask her about her father." And with that, I saw, and I practically almost saw it with my physical eyes. It was as if it was there, over her left shoulder, the misty outline of a man. And I said, "Lucy, tell me about your dad." And she stopped crying. She looked at me and she said, "He was killed 38 years ago by the IRA. And it's 2 days' time is the anniversary of his death." And I said, "Well, did he look like?" And I described the man over her shoulder. She says, "Yeah, how do you know?" And I said, "Well, Lucy, actually, I think I've just seen him over your left shoulder." She stopped crying. She grabbed my arm, held onto it tight, and said, "Thank you, doctor. You don't know how much this means to me."
Oh,
and
my gosh.
The story goes that she's an Irish Catholic. She was in service in Manchester, so she was away from Ireland. Her father, this was the start of the Troubles, her father spoke out against what the IRA were doing, and she believes, she has no evidence, but she believes he was killed by the IRA. And she said she'd always felt the presence of her father around her, especially at times of difficulties. But when she'd mentioned this to her family, because they were Catholics, she was told, "Well, we're not meant to believe this." And so I'd validated her feeling. So she refused my prescription. She said, "Now, well, thank you, doctor. Now I know what's wrong with me. I don't need your pills."
Yeah, I don't need the pills, yeah.
No, so she left my room. I sat there with my jaw on the floor thinking, what on earth have I said? She went out and had a chat with my receptionist, Carol, for about half an hour, telling me, you know, Dr. Rubenstein's giving me this amazing reading. And then a month later, she comes back to see me, and she tells me this story. She was at an Irish social do 2 weeks after she'd seen me, and this rather creepy guy who claimed to have the second sight was tugging at her coattails, saying, "Lucy, Lucy, Lucy, come with me." And she said, why should I come with you?" She said, "Well, I've got to tell you something. Come into this room." She said, "Well, you've got to tell me something. You tell me right here."
Exactly.
Right now.
"I'm not going in that room with
exactly.
you."
And he said, "Lucy, did you know that there's a man over your left shoulder? I think he's your father."
Wow.
Spirit. And she said, "Well, of course I did. My doctor told me that 2 weeks ago."
Yeah.
She said, "You know what, Doc, that sure took the wind out of his sails." and you know, she was very pleased with that. And that sort of validated that.
Sure. The fact that he would see him, though, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I began to think, well, and also, I mean, it saved a prescription. I mean, the National Health Service in the UK is state-run, and we're under cost constraints. So it actually saved the country some money. Not a lot, but I mean,
a little bit.
That was interesting. So I began to think, well, maybe I ought to just sort of be a bit more open to this.
And do you see them as ghostly apparitions or as physical beings?
Well, it varies. I mean, this clairvoyance means sort of seeing things, really. There's two sorts of clairvoyance, really, roughly. I mean, there's subjective clairvoyance, where you have an image in your head, and it's like a very vivid imagination. I have to say, with me, the images are quite bright and shiny, and they seem different to normal images that you have floating through your head. But some people claim, and I have seen this on a couple of occasions, where you to have objective images. In other words, they appear to be out there in the real world as if you're seeing them with your real eyes. In the case of Lucy, it was this sort of weird half-subjective, half-objective. Some people claim very, very clearly to see that. I mean, I know a guy who said he saw spirits since since he was a child, and he couldn't differentiate between real people and spirit people, and he kept on sort of moving out the way for them, and his parents thought he was crazy. So people have different ways of perceiving spiritual beings.
What do you think this all means, Ian? What's on the other side? What is this?
Well, the first thing is, I mean, you have to keep your feet on the ground, and 25% of me is laughing at me, thinking you're crazy. You know, this is just fantasy, wish fulfillment. I mean, we'd all like there to be something. But I mean, that's just my skeptical Western rational medical education getting in the way, which actually is quite difficult because it sort of slows you down. Because when you're training in this field, you have to stop criticizing. Critical thinking is quite important when you're trying to work out what these images mean. But when they're coming to you, you just need to accept them. So let's put that to one side. I mean, there's two major ideas. One is that there is no afterlife, that you're just reading people's minds, and you're building up sort of psychodramatic images as a way of getting the information out. And you can pin that on anything. In fact, after a while, you begin to sort of tie yourself up in knots with that. And I think, to me, it indicates that there's a likelihood that this, I mean, the most reasonable explanation comes down to it, is that maybe there is a spirit life. Maybe we are spiritual beings, and maybe we have to explore the idea that this life is just a part of our life and that we do persist. So if we then explore that, then you open yourself up to a sort of spiritualistic worldview, the idea that we come here possibly to learn, presumably to learn for a reason, and then we go on. I mean, maybe there is no reason. Maybe life we only see a little bit of life. Maybe it's all sort of a natural extension of life, that this is the part of life that we have on this plane of existence, and then life goes on another plane of existence. It's just the nature of things. I mean, I don't know. But it'd be nice to think there is a point and purpose to it, or wouldn't it, George?
It sure would. Let's take a few calls while we continue our chat. Let's go to Linda in Corvallis, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Linda, go ahead. You're on with Dr. Ian Rubenstein.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hi.
I was just so intrigued. I was so happy to get through. I know that in England they have a lot of spiritualist groups, right?
Yeah.
But they don't really have. They haven't found anything like that here in the States. It's not. I haven't. I'm part of a healing group of people, but I wanted to try to get a group started to help open, our awareness and things like that. Do you have any tips on what do you do before? What do they do in the group to start the group out to kind of get people attuned?
Okay, right. Well, we'd sit in a circle, and Keith would sort of go around each member and just say, "This is so and so. This is so and so. This is so and so." So we all say our name. Let's just get us all linked. He then say a brief prayer of protection to the God of your understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first thing you do is opening up. I don't know if you're aware what opening up means, but it's...
Yeah, I think I do.
So it's based on the idea that you open up your psychic centers. And it uses the Indian philosophy where we all have these seven chakras, starting at the base of the spine.
All.
Yeah. So the idea is to draw a light up from your feet, and imagine this light rising up your body. As it rises up your body, your psychic centers open up until it's meant to leave the top of your head, and then you're open to spiritual influence. Hopefully,
and you're grounded as well.
And grounded as well, which is very, very important.
Okay, I just want to say that you really got me psyched about, and I wanted to say that I have had a lot of experiences with, how you said that some images are like halfway there and some kind of in your mind's eye, and some of them are bright and shiny, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had experiences where, like, before my niece died, I had a vision of her, like, over somebody else, And I started worrying about her because I had a dream. And then then she did pass away. And then my sister-in-law, who had passed away, I did see her image over somebody else that was just walking by the bank. And I thought, that's weird, you know, so I just want to open up more, you know, so I can, you know, discuss things or maybe ask for help and help other people, you know, from our departed loved ones on the other side. Well, thank you for listening and talking, and have a wonderful night.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Tell me, Ian, what you think this all means in terms of the spirits. What are they trying to do? What do they want to communicate for?
Okay, well, I guess if there is another world, and let's assume there is, that they find it, well, I mean, they must find it quite frustrating that we can't see them. Imagine that you live on this planet, and then you die, and you think it's the end, and then you find yourself in a whole new world. And, you know, it's interesting, when you read spiritualist literature, I mean, going way back, Keith Hudson, who trained me, collects old books, and he's got really old books from the heydays of spiritualism, starting at the turn of the last century. And they talk about there being a whole world there, organized, halls of learning, this, that, and the other, which sounds very peculiar. And, you know, it's very hard, as a scientifically trained person, to sort of get your head around this. Another world, you know, with halls of learning and, you know, gatherings and all this. How does that work? But, you know, then I thought, imagine you're sort of a fetus in your mother's womb and you're having a chat with someone, if you could, and they say, look, you know, you're going to be born into this world, this natural world, planet Earth, and by the way, they've got schools and buses and roads there, and you're thinking, hey, but it's just a natural world. How can I have schools, buses, and roads? And the fact of the matter is actually wherever human beings are, they organize and change their environment. So, I mean, I would guess that actually, you know, if this is all real, that wherever we end up, humans have made their mark. And there's another world there, another life. But what it's like, I can only vaguely imagine. There are records of people, you can hear recordings on the internet of direct voice mediums. These are mediums where when they sit, voices are meant to speak out of thin air. There's a guy in the UK who died in the 90s, a guy called Leslie Flynn. Keith Hudson, who trained me, sat in with Leslie Flynn, and in Leslie Flynn's circle, voices would speak out of thin air. I mean, the medium could be drinking water or speaking, and voices would speak around him. And they would describe the environment they live in. And you can actually listen to these recordings on the internet. And they describe a world similar to ours, but it seems to be very much dependent on how on the thoughts of the person. So I guess you could say if there is continuation of existence, it's more of a world of thought than our world. But then again, George, if you think about it, we live in a world of thought. I mean, I guess you're sitting in your studio right now. If you look around you, or if you're sitting in your house, everything you see around you exists in someone's head. Sometimes someone designed it.
That's
humans
right.
Do surround themselves by artifacts that we make. So maybe the other side is like that. But the reports back from there, if they're to believe, would be that it's more responsive to thought. It's easier to make things a bit like a virtual reality thing. Maybe it's like the Matrix. I mean, I don't know. There could be all sorts of explanations, and some of them are contradictory. And the reports are that it's very hard to explain these things in earthly terms.
Sure is. Let's go to Jim in Salisbury, Maryland, first-time caller. Go ahead, Jim. You're up.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure.
I wanted to go back to earlier when Ian was talking about his first experience where a medium had channeled his grandfather.
Yeah.
And my dad passed away like 30 years ago, and we had some unresolved issues, and I really didn't get to talk to him or, you know, say I love you and goodbye before he died. So I was just, you know, kind of curious how, you know, the possibilities of, you know, channeling his spirit even over the airwaves. Are there any possibilities of that?
Jim, that's something I don't do. You have to understand that I'm not like John Edward or the other people. This comes to me when I'm in consultation with my patients. I don't have a lot of control over it. When it first started, I used to get loads of stuff through, and it was quite distracting. So I had to learn to shut down and sort of block it out. And in fact, the spiritualist I was working with said, "Look, you know, Ian, you shouldn't be doing this with your patients because you wouldn't want their relatives knocking on your door if they were in spirit disturbing you. Why would you let it happen when you're in clinic?" So I came to some sort of arrangement with whoever's meant to be guiding me, and we can talk about guides later if you like. But I'd only let them through if it was absolutely important, if it was vital. So what happens now is if I'm with someone and I'm just getting into this sort of zone, I call it in the zone where things flow, then I might start to pick up thoughts and images. But if you've got any unresolved issues, what you really need to do is you need to seek out someone you trust, someone who's not going to rip you off with loads of money, and someone who understands the sort of bereavement process as well, and they will help you through it. And it can be very useful. The medium who trained me, Keith Hudson, had unresolved issues with his father. And after his father died, he claims that his father appeared in spirit and spoke to him and cleared up a few issues. And if you look at the work of Raymond Moody,
he was just on the show, too, a couple of days ago.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, Raymond Moody, I read his book, The Last Life. He talks about the use of the psychomantium, which is sort of mirror gaze.
Yeah,
and he claims in his book that this is very useful for sort of bringing up images or thoughts of the person, possibly even the person themselves. He doesn't commit himself in that book. And that this is a way to sort of work through these issues.
Well, that's, you know, eventually, I think science is going to come through and tell us, you know what, this is real, folks.
Mm.
I think it'll happen.
Well, if you look at the work that Professor Gary Schwartz is doing.
Oh, that's right.
I've met Gary Schwartz.
He's a good guy.
He's a fantastic guy, a very sharp guy, a very good intellect. And of course, he says if you want to see good baseball, look at the stars. He's done some research with some top mediums. And there's also some other stuff. I mean, not just mediumship, but I mean, you've got to understand that all of this stuff is taboo in terms of the skeptical Western rational view of life. But there's a guy called Daryl Bem, who's a parapsychologist, who's startled the psychology world because he's done some experiments on precognition. And he's time-reversed standard psychological experiments, and he's got good results. And, of course, the problem is that if you criticize his experimental technique, you have to blow the whole of standard psychology out the window.
All right, hold on for a second, Ian. We're already at the break again. We're going to come back with you, though. We'll talk about spirit guides and take final phone calls. Well, if Frank were around, I bet he'd be a Coast Insider. He'd love that, downloading and podcasting and all those great things. Part of new technology. Well, you can be a Coast Insider, too, for less than 25 cents a day. Be one of the members of the club by going to coasttocoastam.com. Right there at the top, click Coast Insider, and you're a member of the club. We're going to come back in a moment with Dr. Ian, and we're going to take final phone calls here as we talk about his role as a medium and a doctor. And his book is called Consulting Spirit. We'll be back. Well, with Dr. Ian Rubenstein. Ian, are you glad you have this ability?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I've had these experiences. Yeah, I do. It's enriched my life, I have to say. How old was I when it started? 48. And at that stage in your career, you can get a bit burnt out, I guess. And all of a sudden, I discovered that there was this whole new world opening up.
Yeah.
And not only that, I began to speak about it to my patients. And I discovered, to my surprise, that these experiences were remarkably common. Now, I used to think that there was not much difference in the way I thought and other people thought, you know, doctors thought and other people thought. I thought it was just that we had more knowledge, we were more educated, but that's just not so. People see the world in an entirely different way. So I've begun to realize that actually, in the world of sort of educated scientific people, the way they think is actually somewhat strange compared with the way most people think. A lot of people are quite happy to accept their intuitions and their thoughts and feelings and to give them more credence. And, of course, at medical school and the scientific training, you're thought to be very analytical and to not to trust these things. But, you know, as an experienced doctor, you get to know that sometimes hunches are very, very important, and they can often save people's lives. But you don't get any training in it. And I like to think that, I mean, even if mediumship turns out to not to be genuine, I actually think it probably is, but even if it doesn't, the exercise I've gone through has certainly allowed me to tune into my intuition, and I'm a lot more trusting of that. And I think that in itself is useful. But, I mean, it's allowed discussions to broaden out in my consultation. I mean, as a medical student, you're taught to make a physical diagnosis, and then pretty soon when you qualify as a doctor, you learn that the psychological aspects are very important.
Do most of your patients know you have this ability?
Not most of them, but obviously word spreads. I mean, the practice is quite a big practice. We look after 13,000 patients.
My gosh!
Yeah, but it's a family practice. It was founded 100 years ago by Grandfather Barnes, who had four sons who all became doctors, and then two of their kids became doctors. So there was like three generations of doctors.
How many doctors are there?
There's seven or eight of us.
Seven or eight of you handling 13,000 patients?
Yeah, and there's three nurses. We have a lot of backup support. We have
that's a lot of house calls, Ian.
Not that we used to do a lot more. Oh, we're probably doing each of us about one or two a day. That's how it works.
That's a lot.
Not in the UK, it's not.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's take some final calls here for you. And also, I want to find out, well, I ask you now, where do you get your book, Consulting Spirit?
It's on Amazon.
Good.
Yeah, just look at Amazon.com.
They've got it all.
Yeah.
Let's go to Sacramento, California. Hello, Terry. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Terry.
George. Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Terry.
I don't know if you can help me, but maybe you can point me in the right direction. I had a colonoscopy tonight, and everything's fine. It was really traumatic, and I've been having a lot of problems, and they can't find anything. And I've been to Medical Intuitive before, and I wanted to know if your spirit guide had anything to say, but maybe that's something that you can't do right now. But maybe you can point me in the right direction. Who do you recommend anybody? Because they can't find anything, but I've been suffering.
Yeah, I deliberately keep away from doing medical diagnoses using this because it's, you know, professionally very dangerous. I mean, it's bad enough claiming you could speak to dead people.
Yeah.
So I try and keep a firm fine line. However, I actually think it's worthwhile seeing healers. Now, provided that you're absolutely certain that your physicians have told you there's nothing, you know, that
physically wrong with you, yeah.
which is very important. If you've gone through all the standard stuff and you're still left with these symptoms that you can't get a handle on, then I think it's well worth exploring alternative areas of treatment, be it hypnotherapy, acupuncture, or whatever rings your bell. And if you find that spiritual healing appeals to you, then by all means, try it out. But beware, there are a lot of people there who will take your money and claim to do things, and they don't have your best interests at heart. I mean, I can't tell you who's bona fide in the States. But I have to tell you, when my dad died and I was feeling sort of upset and physically shaken, I visited a local healing sanctuary where a guy claims to channel a deceased doctor through. He's very convincing. And he laid his hands on me, and I felt a hell of a lot better. It may have been psychological, but quite frankly, I don't care.
If it works, it works, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Spirit guides. Do we all have them?
Apparently so.
Are they guardian angels, Ian?
Well, it depends on how you define angels. I mean, if you're talking about angels in the biblical sense, I doubt it. I mean, angels in the biblical sense are enormously powerful beings. And I've never personally met one, although my own physician at the meeting once, when I was talking to people about this at a medical meeting, he said, "Look, Ian, just be quiet. I've seen angels all my life, standing by the bedside of deceased patients, but I'm not telling anyone." But I mean, spiritualists believe your spirit guides are people who once lived on Earth, and they are then assigned to you throughout your stay on Earth, and their idea is to help you. And I really wrestle with this concept. I found it very difficult and still do. I mean, would you want to be assigned to someone like me? It would be very boring. and what do they do, hang around all the time? How does that work? But I think the way it works is, if it's true, is that they're in the back of your mind, much in the same way as you're in the back of their mind. And you're sort of linked by a sort of a mental link, if that helps. Spiritualists believe your spirit guides are really important when you're engaged in this work, and there's a good reason for it. First of all, they say there's a whole organization on the other side, so that when a medium's working, there's a load of people who want to come through, and this has to be organized and marshaled. So the jobs of spirit guides are sort of organize things so that one person comes through at a time. You have no interlopers coming in, people who try and butt in. And also there's a more technical aspect, and this is to do with the concept of frequency. So spiritualists would say that the earth plane vibrates, I love that term, vibrates a lower frequency than the spirit plane. So what a medium's attempting to do is to sort of raise their sort of spiritual vibrations higher. And the communicating entity or spirit has to try and lower their frequency. And hopefully you meet in the middle. And it's the job of the guide, they would say, to facilitate that process, possibly acting as an intermediary, possibly just showing people how to do it. I don't know. A lot of mediums would say they've never met their guide. I mean, I have a patient, Barbara, who's incredibly psychic, and she says, well, I've never met my guides. I just ask my angels for help.
But they know they're there.
She feels there's someone there. Now, with me, I'm not often aware of my guide, but when going through the exercises, I have actually met two guides. Now, whether they're real or just fantasies, I mean, you could argue that what you're doing is you're allowing a part of your own unconscious mind still to go off and do this stuff, and it presents itself to you as an independent entity. I'm still not sure. And even some very famous mediums weren't sure. There's a medium called Eileen Garrett, and she was never sure whether her guides, and she was in the 1930s, were actually separate independent personalities. She was always uncertain, but she got some very evidential messages through nonetheless. But I mean, a couple of times when I've been very low in energy and thought, I really can't do this, and I was in circle. I remember once I asked this guy who got a guide, he calls himself Koza, being a member of the Koza tribe in Africa, he says. And one evening I thought, I can't do this stuff, I'm tired. In fact, my father-in-law had just died, and I was feeling low in energy. And I sat back in circle and said, look, I'm not doing this. If you're real, Koza, you can do it. And with that, I actually saw like a double silhouette come into the circle and move towards a guy called Dave. And the silhouette resolved into two short people, one who claimed to be his grandfather and his grandmother. And the grandfather showed me his workshop, lots of little bits of leather and brass-handled tools, and then told me Dave's lost something, told him to keep looking for it. And then said, my name's, he gave me his name, can't remember his name, but his wife was called Elizabeth. And when I gave the message to Dave, he took it all. He said, yeah, my grandfather was a bookbinder. He described his workshop, he described his tools, and I've lost the keys to my factory. And I feel I didn't do that. I mean, I literally sat back and said, look, Koza, if you're real, you get on and do it. Spiritualists also feel that you have to sort of validate your guide. So you look for other mediums to say, yes, I've seen this guide around you, or even odd coincidences can occur that make you think, well, okay, maybe they're trying to get through to me. But it's all very, very interesting, and I still wrestle with the concept of spirit guides, to be honest.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. Frank in Newark, New Jersey, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Frank.
How are you? Good morning, George. Great show.
Thank you, sir.
And I'd like to mention to the doctor that I have had some very profound spiritual experiences all my life. And I went to the library to research and to see if there was anything comparable. Mm. And I discovered a brilliant scientist, Emanuel Swedenborg.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And he describes my experiences, even though he lived in the 18th century, to the T. And he made discoveries in every branch of science merely because he was in search of the soul. Mm. And Stanford University rated him the number one most brilliant mind in the world. And I mean, with his resume, but I'm saying I was profoundly inspired by the writings of Emanuel Swedenborg, and I was wondering if you, the good doctor, have heard of him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was very mystical in his approach, and he gave some very evidential messages to one of the Swedish queens, I think. I think there was a fire in Stockholm, and he claimed to have seen it, and he got the message out 3 days before it got through to anybody else. And it's interesting, isn't it? He wrote loads of books, and also talked about his travels on the other side. And he was no fool. I think it's quite interesting how nowadays a mainstream scientist absolutely dismiss this. And yet, not so long ago, mainstream scientists were exploring this field. I mean, people like Oliver Lodge, Sir William Crookes, people like this in the late Victorian era, they really felt they were onto something. And somehow or other, we've got stuck in a... I suppose we've become entranced with our scientific and technical progress. I mean, materialistic science has given us... It's given us this radio show, hasn't it? It's given us everything.
Sure has.
But to some extent, people aren't happy, are they? I mean, you know, we all feel like we're missing something. So I don't see why science has to sort of be at variance with this. I mean, there's this new thing which I call scientism. People who are, they worship at the altar of science, and they feel that, you know, that they are dogmatic skeptics, that this cannot be true, and they won't even look at the evidence. And yet you have some really good, interesting thinkers. I mean, my favorite thinker at the moment is a guy called Rupert Sheldrake.
Oh, sure. Sure. You just had him on the show.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
I think his guy's amazing.
You know, he was almost stabbed to death at a conference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a sort of ire that sort of gets invoked by these people. I don't know. I mean, I've always been a little bit skeptical, but I mean, healthy. You have to have a healthy skepticism. You have to look at the evidence.
Of course.
But when the evidence starts shaking you by the neck and saying, "Look, you know, look at this," I mean, you've got to be. I don't want to say you've got to be stupid, but you've got to be really sort of narrow in your focus, not to think, "Hey, what's going on?" And I don't know if you've ever heard of the Enfield poltergeist.
Come again.
Okay. Well, I practice in an area called Enfield. And in the 1970s, there was a very famous poltergeist case there. It's one of the two most famous poltergeist cases in the world. One in Germany, the Rosenheim case, and
right.
Enfield happens to be in my area. And for years, I've been meeting people who actually witnessed it. I mean, there was a guy who works across from my clinic, and he actually saw things lifting up and elevating in this house and smashing against the wall. And the guy is no fool. Now, these are bona fide, ordinary observers. And science, a lot of scientists say, well, you know, it's anecdotal. We can't take this data. It's not, we can't take this data seriously. And I agree, science is not very good at coping with anecdote. But, I mean, I recall that in the 18th century, it was anecdotal that stones fell from the sky. And somebody said, well, you know, stones don't fall from the sky. And, hey,
but it
you know,
did. It happened.
Do.
And frogs and everything else fell.
Well, that's something else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, these have been recorded. No one can explain those. And then you get off into the really interesting, bizarre phenomena, which I'm interested in, but I don't think fall in sort of in our current discussion.
Let's go to Oltewa, Tennessee. Lonnie's with us. Hey, Lonnie, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay, Lonnie, thanks you.
Yeah, this is kind of along the doctor's lines. I had called a few days ago, and I had a partial answer, at least one's with science and one's with Tibetan mysticism, that answers the two questions that you ask a lot. What's on the edge of the universe, and is death like a dream state?
Right.
Well, the Tibetan, have you ever heard of the Bardo photo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they believe that when you go across and you go into a horrifying dream state, but it's really just a projection of your own subconscious.
Mm.
And if you learn to, it's basically like a lucid dream. If you learn to control that aspect, then you can go on to a higher realm. And they teach their disciples to learn to discern between what is an actual illusion and what is not. The other was about the edge of the universe. Are you familiar with the concept of a light cone?
Yeah.
Well, in the very beginning, when the Big Bang happened, it started expanding, and then later when the light started expanding, you can never get to the edge of the universe, because the edge of the universe would basically be at the end of that light cone. And from any point of view within the universe, you would have to pass the speed of light in order to get to the edge. So therefore, it would be impossible, according to Einstein's relativity, to get to the edge of the universe. So that question is kind of, you can't answer it.
It's pretty profound. And in the waning moments we have here, Ian, what did you think of Edgar Cayce?
Edgar Cayce fascinates me. Absolutely fascinates me. I mean, you, there you've got, I think, 14,000 documented stenograph readings. And he would give the most amazing diagnoses, wouldn't he? And they were confirmed by leading physicians at the time. God, I wish I could do that. I really do. But, of course, he did it in his sleep, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in a trance state.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. The trouble with all this stuff is that when you hear about it, it's hard to believe it. And I thought that if I got into this myself, maybe I'd really believe it. And you know what? It's still hard to believe. And I guess that's because, you know, we're so mired in sort of everyday physical reality that it sort of drags us down a bit. So, I don't know. There's the Association for Research and Enlightenment that have a lovely library where you can go there and look at his readings. He made some prophecies as well, didn't he? I think one of them was about the rising of Atlantis, and then in the 60s they found the Bimini pavement under the sea. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, time will tell, I guess.
Time will tell indeed. Thank you, Ian, for being on the program. The book, Consulting Spirit, fascinating how a doctor has bridged into the world of mediumship. I'm George Norrie. I shall be back now with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.